Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is For the Record program number 313, Side A. This is an update on Matters German. For some time, I've been discussing conflicts, growing conflicts, between U.S. intelligence and German intelligence. In the wake of the end of the Cold War, there have been a number of indications of strain between not only Europe and the United States, but in particular between Germany and the United States, and in a number of broadcasts available from Spitfire, there is discussion of growing conflicts between U.S. and German intelligence. One aspect of this conflict that has expanded into a relatively common element of political discourse in the basically, even in the mainstream media, has concerned the Echelon network of the National Security Agency. This is something conducted, this is an operation apparently conducted in combination with British intelligence, and it's something that is officially denied by NSA and by British intelligence, but it's part of an electronic intelligence gathering operation that involves the Menwith Hill listening facility, about which I've spoken a number of different times. There has been a growing chorus of criticism of the NSA and of British intelligence with regard to the Menwith Hill listening facility, some of it justifiable and some of it ridiculous, frankly. I do not hold a brief for any sort of abuses of national security power or infringements of privacy, but the fact of the matter is that spying is something that all countries do. Monitoring electronic communications is something that all countries do, and I view both the Menwith Hill listening facility and the Echelon network as vital to U.S. national security, although I also would not be at all surprised if there were any number of abuses that are conducted in connection with that. What strikes me as rather odd is, well, not odd, but what strikes me as remarkable about the criticism of the Menwith Hill facility and also the Echelon network is that German intelligence, among others, engage in exactly that type of activity. And in particular, the BND, the main German intelligence service, has been involved with the NSA in some compromising of software for exactly the purposes of not only spying on people and institutions in general, but specifically for the purposes of industrial espionage. There's been a particularly ridiculous element of discussion within Germany that blames Germany's economic problems on the ferreting out of industrial secrets by the Echelon network. That's quite simply ridiculous, and that's not to say that I hold a brief for any sort of national security abuse, but quite simply, the Echelon network and the NSA are not responsible for Germany's economic problems. That is quite simply nationalistic xenophobia and scapegoating under the circumstances. For listeners who find my stance on the Menwith Hill facility and the Echelon network troubling, I can appreciate that. It's rather like saying that an intelligence service or a police agency, say the FBI, shouldn't be allowed to tap phones. Well, any police agency or any federal, any police agency, any federal police agency in particular, must be able to tap phones as a general consideration. This is not to say that abuse of that power is to be sanctioned in any way. From a practical standpoint, I'm not sure if there has ever been a form of power that hasn't been abused. I'd be inclined to suspect not. But the fact of the matter is, all countries spy on each other. The main German human facility around the world is the Goethe Institute, run by the German government. It's ostensibly a cultural institute. It stages events in various cities around the world. It's actually a front for the BND. The Goethe Institute is just one of the many German intelligence gathering facilities. I would note that as globalization takes place, German utilities, German insurance companies, and Deutsche Telekom, a German mobile phone company, are buying up communications facilities and or corporate properties in the United States, and this is going to permit Germany to spy on the most intimate details of private American citizens. We'll be talking about German corporate purchases in the United States in weeks to come. We're going to be talking about a very significant EU step, which would prevent hostile takeovers by foreign corporations. But again, I don't want to be misunderstood as sanctioning any sort of abuse by any sort of federal power. Nonetheless, conducting surveillance and maintaining national security in a real sense is something that every intelligence service and every federal government has to be able to do. How one goes about preventing abuse of such a thing is a subject for debate, and one that I suspect has confounded social philosophers over the ages. How does one keep power? How does one exercise power without it being abused? I seriously doubt there's ever been a police agency or an intelligence service that hasn't, at least at times, abused its power. It's sort of the nature of the beast. Nonetheless, though, I think that the debate that is now in being engaged in about Men with Hill and about the Echelon facility should be seen in its proper context, which is of the growing friction between Germany and the United Kingdom and between Germany and the United States. For those people who are sticklers about personal privacy, and I can understand that, my own feeling is that not only the internet age, but frankly, when people accepted the imposition of being tested, submitting urine samples to prospective employers in order to permit those employers to verify that they're not taking illegal drugs, I think all considerations of personal privacy went down the toilet, so to speak. The fact of the matter is that when you submit a urine sample, your DNA is present in that urine sample, and that urine sample becomes the property of either your employer or of your prospective employer. And I have suggested for a number of years that submitting your DNA to a complete stranger or to an employer is not necessarily the wisest course of action, because they share information with other institutions, including HMOs and insurance companies. And I had suspected for some time that there is, in fact, DNA analysis being conducted on those urine samples, and that information is being shared with other institutions. Recently, there was a case of a railroad, I believe it was Burlington Northern, but I may be wrong about that, but there was a case in which employees had been submitting urine samples for drug analysis, and in fact, just exactly what I had suspected, DNA analysis of those urine samples was taking place and being shared with insurance companies. So for those of you who might be worried that the NSA is taking an interest in your email, I would worry more about submitting your DNA to a complete stranger whose property your DNA then, well, basically your DNA then becomes their property. In that context, and moving along to the substance of the discussion, the following article about EU pressure on an investigation of Echelon was carried in the Financial Times of Wednesday, May 30th of the year 2001. This is an article by Deborah Hargraves in Brussels. It's headlined, EU Warns on Email Spy Threat from US. It reads in part as follows. Public users of email in the European Union should use encryption technology for their personal emails to ensure that they are not spied on by a U.S.-led spy network called Echelon, the European Parliament said yesterday. However, the 108-page report from a special committee of the Parliament contained no evidence that the Echelon network was used for industrial espionage. Parliament set up the committee a year ago to investigate allegations that the U.S., and UK were regularly passing sensitive commercial information gained from intercepting emails and phone calls to companies. Although the US has denied the existence of Echelon, the committee's report said they found evidence that it was operating. The system was set up in 1948 for intelligence gathering by the US, Britain, Canada, New Zealand, and Australia. It is based at Fort Meade in Maryland, US, and Cheltenham in the United Kingdom. The Parliament's report called on Britain to rethink its link to Echelon, as it could be violating European human rights laws. Quote, Britain has to choose between its relationship with the EU and with the US, said Glyn Ford, UK Labour MEP. It also called on the US to guarantee more privacy protection for its own population. Again, I think I've pretty much said over the years what I mean to say about Echelon and Men with Hill. I would note that this discussion takes place in the context of growing friction, as I said, between not only the United States and Germany, but the United States and the EU. In many of those points of friction, I disagree with the stance of the United States, such as the American stance on the Kyoto Treaty, but with regard to a number of things, including corporate takeovers, and with regard to the Echelon and Men with Hill facilities, both of them vital to U.S. national security, I think that the German complaints about Echelon and Men with Hill should be seen in the context of growing German nationalism and imperialism. In that context, I note the following. Research credit on this goes to a member of a listening audience. This is from an AP story that is datelined Berlin and is headlined U.S. to shut spy station in Germany. This article is datelined June 1st, and the article reads as follows. And again, this is about German pressure on the German dissatisfaction with and pressure on U.S. and British intelligence and the Echelon Men with Hill complex. Once again, AP story Dateline Berlin. This was authored by Tony Shushka, and I'm guessing at the pronunciation, C-Z-U-C-Z-K-A, an Associated Press writer. The article is, again, headlined, U.S. to shut spy station in Germany. It reads in part as follows. For years, European critics have suspected that a U.S. Army listening post set against the snow-peaked Bavarian Alps does more than just spy for the military. Allegedly part of a super-secret global eavesdropping network the United States has never confirmed, the Bad Aibling station now is set for closure next year because it's no longer needed, U.S. officials said Friday. About all the Pentagon says about the Bad Aibling station, located some 35 miles southeast of Munich, is that it helps U.S. forces keep tabs on the Balkans. But in Germany, media reports and politicians persistently linked the spy post in recent years to alleged attempts by the U.S. National Security Agency to spy for economic advantage after the end of the Cold War. The NSA denies it conducts industrial espionage. Just this week, a European Parliament report cited Bad Aibling among some 20 stations worldwide believed to play a role in the U.S.-led spy network. The report, prepared after 7 months of testimony by communications and security experts, concluded that the network, dubbed Echelon, exists despite U.S. denials. It was allegedly set up at the start of the Cold War for intelligence gathering and has grown into a girdle of stations mainly meant to intercept private and commercial communications, not military intelligence. However, the Parliament's vice president, Gerhard Schmidt, conceded the group could not prove the Americans were passing on European trade secrets to give U.S. business an advantage. The report also backed off an earlier study by the European Parliament that claimed the spy network listens in on, quote, billions of messages per hour, unquote, including telephone calls, fax transmissions, and private emails. Still, German officials are unlikely to miss the station, which is scheduled to close September 30th, 2002. The base will be handed back to Germany, minus the snooping equipment, said Shirley Startzman, a spokeswoman for the U.S. Army Intelligence and Security Command. Quote, nearly 12 years after the end of the Cold War, this is an overdue step, unquote, said Wolfgang Gerhard, leader of a small pro-business party in the German parliament. Quote, the Americans have never been able to banish rumors that it was also used for economic espionage against German companies, unquote, he said. The German magazine Der Spiegel reported last June that German lawmakers were invited inside the Bad Aibling station in an unusually open attempt by U.S. officials to dispel rumors of economic espionage. And again, economic espionage is conducted by all countries. Whether or not the Echelon network is involved with it is anybody's guess. But the Germans conduct economic espionage in the United States, as well as other types of espionage. There was a very interesting spying scandal within the Los Angeles Police Department in the early 1980s, in which members of an elite LAPD intelligence unit were conducting political espionage in the LA area, simply spying on people with whose politics they disagreed. The information was then being communicated to a private right-wing intelligence network called Western Goals, and in addition to putting the information in a computer in Los Angeles, the information was being put in a matching computer bank in Germany. Give that one some thought as you assess matters of privacy. Here you have members of the LAPD conducting political espionage on private citizens in Los Angeles and putting the information into a computer bank in Germany. During the course of the recent British campaign, There were some statements that apparently also drew some return fire from Germany. I'll be talking about those in weeks to come in connection with German corporate control over the American media, but noting the growing friction between German intelligence and U.S. intelligence, and also growing friction between Germany and the United Kingdom, and noting the statement that I've made a number of times over the years that in the wake of the end of the Cold War, the battle lines of World War II, to a certain extent, are being once again redrawn, with Germany squaring off against the United Kingdom and the United States. One could perhaps call this Germania versus Anglo-Saxonia. It remains to be seen exactly where the former Soviet Union ends up, but I think that given the consummately stupid policies and outrageous policies that the Bush administration has been following, managing to alienate much of the civilized world so far, I would say that it would not be too hard for, say, Germany and the EU ultimately to marshal a lot of forces against the United States, given the almost sociopathic policies that the Bush administration has pursued in certain respects, Kyoto being one of the most salient, and the, quote, missile defense, unquote, being another. There was a very interesting comment made by a conservative member of parliament in Britain, and I will read this individual's comments for their inherent content. This is not to say that I hold a brief for the forces of reaction in Britain, the Tories, any more than I do for the forces of reaction anywhere else. But nonetheless, I think that within this criticism, some of it overblown perhaps, there are some very, very significant elements of truth. And in particular, this very reactionary member of Parliament has noted that in the European Monetary Union, we have the realization of the Central European Economic Union, first proposed by pan-German theoretician and economist Friedrich Liest in the 1840s, as a vehicle for German world domination. The following article is from the Financial Times of May 12th and May 13th of the year 2001. This is an article by Robert Shrimsley, S-H-R-I-M-S-L-E-Y, of the Financial Times. It's headlined, MP likens Schroeder's vision for Europe to Hitler's. And I think that as overblown as these comments are perhaps in tone, their substance has a lot more accuracy to them is likely to be recognized by most people in the United States. A high-profile opposition conservative member of parliament was at the center of the embarrassing dispute last night, after he likened Gerhard Schroeder's vision of Europe to Adolf Hitler's. Sir Peter Tapsell, T-A-P-S-E-L-L, and I may be mispronouncing that, who nominated William Hague as party leader in 1997, described the German Chancellor's proposals for the European Union as a, quote, Germanic master plan, unquote. That, by the way, is quite accurate. Quote, we may not have studied Hitler's Mein Kampf in time, but by heaven there is no excuse for us not studying the Schroeder plan now, he said. Mr. Schroeder last week said the European Commission should become a central government answerable to a two-chamber European Parliament with the EU Council of Ministers as its upper house. Sir Peter's remarks to his constituency party were denounced as odious by the governing Labour Party. One pro-European conservative said he feared it played into Labour's hands by helping it depict the conservatives as extreme, unquote. Sir Peter said he would never, unquote, support joining the euro, a more hardline position than official conservative policy. Note the next section, because this part is absolutely accurate. He added that a single currency was once proposed by the Nazi Reichsbank, quote, as a means of perpetuating German dominance in Europe after Germany won the war, unquote. That part is basically accurate. I would note that the Bormann organization, about which I speak so often and which would appear to be understandably arcane to uninitiated listeners, is in fact the main vehicle for economic and political perpetuation of what I call the Underground Reich. It's why I speak about it so often. Continuing, looking to a future referendum on the euro, Sir Peter said, quote, you may be sure that the currency section of Dr. Goebbels' Guide to Falsehood is already well-thumbed by the Labour spin doctors, unquote. Robin Cook, the foreign secretary, said that while he disagreed with aspects of Mr. Schroeder's plan, quote, it is deplorable to bracket him with Hitler, unquote. Well, in terms of social policy, there is no basis for comparison, but in terms of economic and geopolitical policy, there are far more areas of similarity than the uninitiated might be inclined to recognize offhand. The item that I'm going to be taking up next on this broadcast concerns a very important development with regard to the European Parliament, and this is to be viewed squarely in the context of the Bormann Organization, and this is to be also viewed in the context of the discussion of German corporate control over the American media. One of the points that I've made in the past in this particular context is that one of the main differences between American corporations and German corporations is that the American corporations do not operate on the basis of a concerted, coordinated national agenda. They coordinate with regard to taxation, marketing, advertising, environmental, and labor considerations, but other than that, they are relatively apolitical and almost anarchic in terms of their orientation. They do not have a concerted national agenda, and the American-based corporations are just as likely to sell out to a foreign competitor, assuming that the profitability for the shareholders is sufficient, as they are to continue on a given domestic course, whereas German corporations operate rather like the divisions of an organized army of national conquest. They coordinate with one another. The American corporations might perhaps be compared to the armies of a mercenary warlord, whereas the German corporations are the concerted vehicles of national dominance. This discussed in a number of broadcasts, including For the Record program number 99. And the dominant coordinating element with regard to German corporations is the Bormann Organization, about which I've spoken many times. In a number of programs, For the Record program number 200 and others, I talked about the hostile takeover of the Mannesmann Corporation by Vodafone. The behavior of German corporations in connection with the Vodafone-Mannesmann hostile takeover is perhaps one of the best illustrations of the difference in German and American corporate policy. And again, the German corporations are the vehicles for the realization of a program of national imperialism, a much more intelligent and sophisticated program than the United States has realized, which is a relatively straightforward program of international control. The German program of international control is much more sophisticated. Instead of using armies to go crashing across a country's borders, they use corporations to buy up the targeted country in a coordinated fashion, and as Friedrich List had proposed, economic control leads automatically to political control. There has recently, as I said, been an action by the European Parliament which is absolutely relevant to the globalization process, and in the context of which the German corporate nationalist agenda can be seen, contrasting with the anarchic mercenary agenda of American corporations, not in any way coordinating their activities and not with an overall national agenda. The following is from the Financial Times of Thursday, May 3rd of the year 2001, and this alludes to the German change of stance with regard to the European Takeover Code. Ultimately, as we're going to see in subsequent articles on this subject, Germany was able to impose its will on the European Union, which is not surprising since the European Union is basically dominated by Germany. This is from the Financial Times of Thursday, May 3rd of the year 2001. It's by Haig Simonian in Berlin. It's headlined, Berlin bowed to pressure, unquote, over new takeover code, and this reads in part as follows. Berlin changed its position on a planned new European takeover code that would make German companies more vulnerable to hostile bids. After strong pressure from unions and management in heavy industry, German officials said yesterday. Officials identified Hubertus Schmoldt, S-C-H-M-O-L-D-T, chairman of the powerful Mining, Chemicals, and Energy Union, as a key figure behind the center-left government's change of heart. Mr. Schmoldt was not available for comment yesterday. However, officials also noted that some big chemical groups, as well as other traditional manufacturers, had also expressed strong reservations over the planned EU code. Skipping down. Concern among German companies and unions about hostile takeovers increased after the successful acquisition of Mannesmann, the Dusseldorf-based telecommunications and industrial group by Vodafone, the UK telecommunications group in late 1999. The deal prompted broad debate about Germany's potential, quote, vulnerability, unquote, to foreign predators. Skipping down again, the European Commission yesterday argued that energy security concerns did not justify European Union member states holding golden shares, unquote, that could control the extent of foreign shareholdings in privatized companies. And we're going to talk about the golden shares and about the European Parliament's passage of this German-generated legislation with regard to hostile takeovers later on in this program. It's very important to consider that in the context of the German corporate control over the American media and with regard to globalization, because as the American and other markets are being opened up to basically free-for-all bidding and acquisition by foreign corporations, one should note that this is not a level corporate playing field. And that, just as is the case with regard to my discussion of Echelon, Menwith Hill, etc., should not be endorsed as an endorsement of globalization and the abuses that can be realized through that, but rather it is to take note as an American citizen of what is basically a threat to American sovereignty that is not receiving the attention due it. And we'll be talking about the European Parliament's passage of this legislation and some of its implications in the second half of this broadcast. I've made allusion to other programs that I've done over the years. Those are available from a CD and tape duplication service called Spitfire. Their mailing address is P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, 95005. The email address is mail, M-A-I-L, at spitfirelist.com. And there's a list of and description of the various programs available from Spitfire on the Real Audio Equipped Spitfire website at www.spitfirelist.com. Sister station WFMU-FM in Jersey City, New Jersey, is putting together compiling the For the Record programs on Real Audio. There are a number of the more recent For the Record programs streaming on the WFMU website at wfmu.org/Dave Emory, DaveEmory. And there are other more numerous and older For the Record programs available on another WFMU website. It has a longer URL, and those are available not streaming but for download. There are links to both WFMU websites on the Spitfire website in the For the Record section. Listeners can listen to the three-hour program that I do on KFJC-FM in the South San Francisco Bay Area from 7 to 10 p.m. on Sunday night on kfjc.org. Look in the Transmissions and Public Affairs section. This concludes Side 1 of For the Record Program Number 313, Update on Germany. This is being recorded on July 15th of the year 2001. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.